Yo, what is up, lacrosse world? This is the In the Crease podcast. I am your co-host, Dan Abern, digital media and recruiting coordinator at Inside Lacrosse. I've got Kyle Devitt, the gear and lifestyle editor, up in the Shire. It's Monday, early. We're staying up late because we are still fired up from the exhilarating first round, Kyle. Was it fun?
Yeah, Sunday was good. Sunday was good.
Yeah, so, right? The first round, not the best round after all.
Yeah. I got excited. I say things when I'm excited.
Before we get started talking about all these games, if you go back to last week's pod, yo, were we right or were we right? I think we nailed the prediction for every single game.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like it's our job. I mean, talk about the other games, though. We had some stinkers, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, still doesn't shake my belief that this wasn't a strong field. We still had some great matchups. Some teams showed up. Some teams didn't get off the bus. So what we're going to do here to kick off the show is going to prioritize the best games for you guys and not just flatly run down everything chronologically, which is, you know, a nice way of saying the games on Saturday sucked and we want to talk about the Sunday games first. But before we even get into that, we're going to get through a little bit of the matchups for next week real quick before we go backwards. We're going to go forwards.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's start Cornell versus Maryland. The number one thing that I think is going to happen in this game is that Maryland is going to shut Jeff T off. But I think against Maryland, Cornell has to find a way to get him the ball.
Yeah, I think that's fair. My question is, like, who shuts him off, though? Like, who are they going to do that?
The thing is,
is that a Bryce Young job?
Yeah, that's the thing, is that you have two very capable cover guys. You kind of have the bruiser in Corley, and then you kind of have the more one-on-one cover guy in Bryce Young. Who is the better defender? I think that is the question on the Maryland staff's plate this week, because I think whoever the better defender is, you might want to keep not on Jeff Teat.
Absolutely. Next matchup we're going to talk about, Yale versus Loyola. How do you see this playing out?
I like the potential for a really physical game and also pretty fast game. I think, like, both of these teams, when they get their opportunities, really successful, really athletic and finesse in the middle of the field. Really, really excited, though, for the, I guess it's a duel between Pat Spencer and Ben Reeves, who, for my money, are, like, the two most athletic attackmen in the country right now, would you say?
I mean, physically imposing is the adjective, yes, I would use, but yeah, you could say that. Yeah,
what?
For sure. I think that's definitely the marquee. They're not matched up against each other, but that's the thing everyone's looking forward to. And I think the winner of this game, even if he has a worse game than the guy he's going against, much closer to that Tewarton than he was before it.
True, true. Next game, though, we've got Hopkins versus Duke, and looking away from last year's result, the blowout by Johns Hopkins, the blowout by Duke in the first round, this has historically been like a classic NCAA tournament game. You think of the NCAA finals, the NCAA semifinals, where Hopkins and Duke were going at it in like the years 2007, 2008, all those years. This one's a classic. This one feels like it has that same potential. Two teams who were absolutely lights out through most of the season, and two senior classes that really, really want to get to championship weekend.
Hypothetical, is there a way that both of these teams can lose this game?
I don't think that's possible unless Bane is on the field, Kyle.
It's too bad. Next game, we're going to talk about Denver versus Albany. Talking about marquee matchups, these guys will go up against each other. Trevor Baptiste, T.D. Ireland, at the X. We're going to get to this a little bit later when we go through some of the game, you know, the Albany game and the Denver game. But I've never been more excited for a face-off battle ever. Have you?
Yeah, this is going to be, for all the marbles, bragging rights for infinity. This is the real Infinity War, Kyle. T.D. Earland versus Trevor Baptiste. You like that. You
had
like
that. In your pocket.
He's smiling.
You had that in your pocket for
a
while.
I did. I just came up with that on the spot.
Wow. All right.
All right, Kyle.
Yeah.
Previews are done. Let's talk about the action. That's what we're best at. Let's go to really, really late Saturday night because I was caught in the wrath of God that descended upon Ridley Athletic Complex late Saturday night. We ended up getting this game in, though. Loyola prevailed 14-12.
Yeah, so we had to pick national championship guys earlier in our national championship teams earlier in the week for, you know, a post on Inside the Cross. And Dan picked Loyola last minute to win the national championship. And before the game started, I just became a UVA fan in that moment. I merged minds with Caroline Darney and all of Thomas Jefferson's progeny to create a virtual UVA superfan. And even in that state, I knew in the second quarter that the game was lost. The thing about the UVA system that this coaching staff has brought is that it needs two very important things to succeed: a strong goaltender and a stronger faceoff man. And there is no better example of that than this game and what happened as a result of UVA not having those two things at opportune moments.
So you became a UVA fan simply because you wanted me to be wrong?
Yes, that is correct.
This is funny because I feel like every inclination should have led me to pick Virginia. My first roommate at the house that I currently live in was a UVA grad. We still have a framed portrait of a young Thomas Jefferson next to our television. Yeah, got a lot of books around about UVA culture. Truth be told, though, I actually just kind of picked Loyola because it was just, like, random. I was like, what's a team that, like, I would never pick? So I went with Loyola, and I came up with my argument. I was like, you know what? I really don't know who's going to win the whole thing this year. People have been asking me that. Uber drivers have been asking me that. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know, man. I really don't know. There's a lot of good teams out there right now. Talking about UVA, though, build upon your point. There's so much potential with this UVA squad. 70% of their offense comes from their lower classmen. They have two exciting young Poles in Will Rock, Jared Connors, a lot of really good recruits coming in. But at the end of the day, they've got to improve how they play on the defensive end. They made strides at the faceoff X and in cage this year. It's got to be a little bit better. But they still have got to play better defense, right?
Yeah, they get bit by the very same thing that gives them energy, which is transition.
Yeah,
and that happened a lot, many times. Yeah, I think the one thing I want to touch on, too, is I can't say enough about Pat Spencer's influence over a game. He's calm, but also fiery. He reminds me of a certain New England quarterback. And I say that with all sincerity. I'm not just saying it to, like, rile you and the listeners up, although that's fun, too. But the thing about Spencer that stands out above all else is you can see that he is the unquestioned leader of Loyola. Unquestioned. He's as much as Toomey is the coach, he is the leader on the field.
Yeah, we referenced this earlier, but I honestly think that Pat Spencer might be the most physically gifted attackman that I've ever seen. I mean, you talk about a guy who's 6'3", like 200 pounds, can change direction on a dime. Ben Reeves isn't too far behind. That's why we're really excited for next week's matchup. But, man, fans are spoiled between those two guys. But Pat Spencer, this kid could probably play high-level Division I basketball right now. But instead, right now, he's playing a next-level version of lacrosse. And to agree with your point, I really just admire how he imposes his will while also letting the game come to him. Like, if you watch last night, he asserts himself on several dodges. But then when, you know, they play a little two-man game, a guy sets a pick for him, and he just kind of lets that pass come to him. He finds his guy scores. It's truly remarkable how he can just kind of, like, turn it off, turn on and just keep going back and forth.
Yeah, I think, too, going back to, you know, the whole reason we're talking about this is the game. The scoreline doesn't do justice here. Like, Loyola was so dominant, but the reason they were dominant is because of their defense, first and foremost. I mean, at least three of UVA's goals came in garbage time, and there wasn't enough time for the Cavs to get back into it anyway. So it was kind of like, all right, they're going to score, and it's not going to matter. I think that, conversely, I think if UVA played with that desperate energy all game long, something that Lars's teams did do at Brown, we'd be having maybe a different conversation. If Ryan Conrad was healthy, we'd be having a different conversation. If. Doesn't matter. Loyola deserved the win. They played better. They played smarter. And they have a look of a team that doesn't want to settle for one playoff win. I cannot tell you how impressed I was. Foster Huggins threw a pass that was intercepted for a goal very early in the game, and it did. I thought it was going to affect him, and it did not. It just made him more focused and better and more into being the help guy, directing the defense, and not just being a shutdown check throwing defenseman. Like, he is, as much as Pat Spencer is the leader of the offense, Huggins is the leader of the defense. Jacob Stover was also great in net for them as well.
Foster Huggins is just like a wild man, so aggressive, but he always comes away with the plays. He always looks good. He doesn't look like a fool in any single moment. Like, he had so many nice takeaways last night. Really, just all of their pulls are so, They impress me with their athleticism and their aggressiveness. But yeah, to speak to your point, this was maybe the most lopsided two-goal result I can remember. Like, Loyola dominated the game. It was like 9-3 at halftime before UVA got like two goals late to keep themselves not out of it. It was like 10-5 at the halftime break. But it was like Loyola ran like a wild man between Orofici, you know, getting goals off the faceoff, and McNulty getting so much going in the middle of the field. Then the half field offense was so well executed. And it's not just Pat Spencer. You know, we know that he runs the show, but there's a handful of complimentary guys who are having great seasons, Dre Powell in particular. And then they've got the two freshman attackmen in Olmstead and Lindley, who are playing so much more than their years would have you think that make them play. Then you got, like you said, the awesome the face-off between Savio and Orofici, and then Stover just kept things steady in cage. Loyola versus Yale will be fun and physical. I'm really looking forward to that one. Kyle, got some bad news, man.
What's up?
I think we're out of Trimino in the office.
I just, we talked about this. You got to squirrel some away, and you didn't do it again. I'm just not coming back. I'm out.
Let's give a shout out to our sponsor, Trimino. Protein is an important part of any athlete's diet. Supplement your protein diet without excess calories and fat by going with Trimino. Go beyond hydration with Trimino, protein-infused water packed with protein and B vitamins to sustain your game. Trimino has 7 grams of whey protein, no sugars, no carbs, no fats, and only 28 calories. They've got so many delicious flavors. I love all the tropical ones. Citrus and strawberry limeade are some of my favorites. Look for those in stores. You can get Trimino at CVS, local retailers near you, and always on Amazon. Protein never tasted so good. Kyle, let's move on to a game that I was at. Maryland 14, Robert Morris 11.
Yeah, I was going to say you were there for this one. I'm going to let you go first, but what about Bobby Moe, though? What about Bobby Moe, Dan?
Yeah, Tell me, here we go, Bobby Moe, though. Actually, that's a real chant, and it was rolling in the stands at Maryland. Here we go, Bobby Moe. Clap, 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 clap. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I thought that this was going to happen late in the first half. Bobby Moe was balling. They looked great. They were out shooting the Terps, out hustling the Terps, playing great defense. Number 18 was a freak against Connor Kelly. That's Zachary Bryant. He is outstanding. And offensively, Bobby Moe took it to the Terps on their first four goals. The first one came off of two-man play. But then the preceding three all came from individual dodges from behind the cage, individual ISO efforts. I will say this, if not for Dan Morris being outstanding early in the game, this would have snowballed into an unassailable deficit. And like I said, late in the second quarter, 6-3, I thought this was going to happen, but I was like, I need one more goal to be sure. If it was 7-3, I might be really inclined. But of course, we saw Maryland answer, come out with a ton of energy in the second half, blow the doors off, completely change the pace of the game, to be honest, outscored them 11-5, came away with the victory.
Yeah, I mean, one of the theories I've seen bandied about on the Twitters is that if Robert Morris had a different goaltender, or I don't know, the regular starting goaltender, Alex Hegger, they would have won. You know, and, you know, Chris Reynolds out there, he could have pulled an upset of a lifetime. I don't know if I necessarily buy that a different goaltender changes the result, but the real thing that everyone wants to talk about is how RMU got out to that early lead. Because teams are going to study that tape and commit it to memory. They knew that they were going to get limited possessions, and they flipped the script back onto Maryland by working to get great looks on Cage. Not good looks, great looks. And again, we saw this Maryland defense look vulnerable, but this time, like you said, Dan Morris bailed them out.
Yeah, and you know, this is why I think that the Cornell-Maryland matchup is so intriguing, is that we know that Cornell is an extremely sophisticated off-ball offense. And I feel like when Maryland struggled, it's because of teams kind of breaking them down, finding looks on the interior, and beating them cerebrally, so to speak. Would you agree to that?
Yeah, they just get beat with ball movement. It's just too much. Yeah, they're not great at adjusting to the second guy.
Yeah, well, what the early results in this game would indicate, too, is that Maryland's invert defense is a little suspect. If you can get a guy who can dodge against the pole, you know, dodge against a short stick, and has the speed to beat a man, he might be able to find success if the rest of your offense clears out and gives him a one-on-one opportunity. Dan Morris kind of struggled with those guys coming behind the cage with the inside roll, just having a little too little time to react. It's going to be interesting because I feel like Maryland will also look at their own tape and be like, we can't let teams beat us like this. I kind of do agree that maybe if Alex Hegger played, they might have pulled the upset. I don't know. I kind of thought that as well, only because Reynolds finished with 7 saves and it felt like probably could have had a few more, you know, big saves in crucial moments. But I feel like Hegger may have given you more, but Maryland won the game just because they got more possessions. They got a kick in the butt on offense, too. They made a key adjustment by giving Austin Henningsen more draws starting late in the first half. Then Maryland got back to being Maryland on the ground, started dominating the ground ball war. They also surprisingly found offense in transition against a really good defense that's acclimated to playing at that pace. And overall, the Terps played a pretty fast game in the second half. I think a lot of people said, oh, the reason that Maryland went down in the first half is because their effort wasn't there. I was like, I don't know. I think that's taking away from how outstanding Robert Morris was in the first half, because, you know, I saw a team that was up to playing with this team in those first 30 minutes. So I just think it really did come down to making key adjustments for Maryland. Yeah, there was a needed boost. You know, effort-wise, there was a little bit more energy needed in order for the Terps to get it done. But, you know, there's no doubt about it that Robert Morris came to ball in this game.
Yeah, I think looking at the positive side for Maryland, Connor Kelly looks to be in absolute house-wrecking form at this point. You know, back to kind of his normal speed, I guess, which is extraordinary for everybody else. And Maryland's tempo control improved as the game went on, like you were talking about. But I think the one thing that the Terps have to be, you know, cautious of, regardless of scheme or anything like that, is they need to just get a handle on the games early and shut the door. They've been playing from behind a lot, and that's not something that we're accustomed to seeing from a Tillman team, who is very much, you know, foot on the throat.
Yeah.
You know, like, finish the job. And I don't think that we saw that out of Maryland here. And that's kind of the thing that's more disconcerting than the first half not going well for them. It's that it took until the second half for them to actually, like, figure it out. And almost, it was almost like they remembered that they're the defending national champions. And, like, this is a real game. And if we lose this, we're done.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's definitely true. The Maryland has, like, taken the lead and blown opponents out not as much as they have, I would say, over the last two seasons. And, you know, I think you want to take the easy way out and say they're getting the best effort from every team they play, because every team's going to look at their schedule and circle this game simply because Maryland is the defending national champions. But I do think that, you know, they've also become accustomed to not panicking in the moment. But if you fall behind in the NCAA tournament, especially with every single team that's left in the field, that's going to snag you. And I don't know if there's anything to fix as much as there is the need for everyone to execute in order for Maryland to win. You know, I don't think this is a Maryland team like maybe in the past where a singular unit will win you the game. I think in a couple of years past, Maryland's D has won them games. And I think they need the defense to play well. They need the goalie to play well, the offense to play well. And I think perhaps most importantly, the faceoff guys to play well. I think in this game, three out of the four had really bad starts and took time to get up to where they needed to be. Maryland's been playing a lot from behind. Like you said, that will snag them at this level of competition.
I will say this. Every game is circled now. There's no reputation winning anymore.
Yes.
Despite the winners of these first round games largely being the favorites, there is no easy path. And that's why I was so excited about this bracket. But, you know, I think we're seeing now that everyone's best effort is required to move on.
Kyle, we got T-shirt pitch of the week.
Yeah.
I like this idea. Shoot.
Yeah. I'm gonna shoot my shot. Figuratively and literally, I'm going to go with a Pat Spencer basketball jersey, if only because all the talk about Picasso tired me out. Like, I was back in my surrealist art class in college that I only took because I was completely hungover when I signed up for my sophomore classes. I don't want to hear about it, dude. I don't want to hear about Picasso. I want to watch lacrosse. So, talking about the shirt, sorry, getting back. The shirt has cut off sleeves and it says Spencer's Gifts across the front. And on the back, it's his number. Boom. I mean, listen, you guys, you got to stop throwing your money at me. It's getting embarrassing. Like, just keep some for yourself. I know I'm just making everyone all this money all year long, but, you know, I'm a humble man. I can't take it anymore. But this idea, if we don't do this idea, I'm just going to do it myself with, like, some glitter and like, a glue stick. Because they're going to be hilarious.
Some construction paper.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I'll cut it out. I cut sleeves off my shirts. I'm still got a little meathead left in me. We'll figure it out.
I actually think that after getting some feedback and watching one game in particular this weekend, that we need to make an RPI is for losers T-shirt. That's my simple idea. Or the criteria is wrong T-shirt. Kyle, let's move. Sunday night in the Dome, as always, Cornell 10, Syracuse 9.
Okay, so I'm going to admit something here. When I saw how Syracuse was playing from the opening whistle, I thought Cornell were toast. Like, I went to get butter out of the fridge, and I was warming it up to spread all over them. Cuse was playing like they were shot out of a cannon. Getting all the bounces, getting calls, ground balls. It looked like yet another classic orange playoff win. And then Jeff Teague got the ball. And for a split second, I went, oh, yeah, you're going to make them pay for shutting you off. You to the cage. And then the ball was on the ground. And I know Cornell won the game. We're going to get there. But, man, Nick Mellon was incredible in this game. He was absolutely incredible, and I want to say it from the jump. It is an arduous task to to hold Jeff Teat down, and he did it pretty much single-handedly.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think Cornell's D looked a little shell-shocked early in the game and let the athleticism of Cuse beat them. Like, you know, Brendan Curry, Tucker Dordovic, that rollback is lethal. They looked so much better in the second half and late in the game. Christian Knight came in hand with a few key saves late in the game. But, you know, I do agree. I think that Nick Mellon, you know, it's hard to say because, like, it's so weird that, you know, teams will willingly let them play 5-on-5 like that. But it's so – the one thing that I can't really temper is I've never seen a player get the attention that Jeff Teat has. Like, I can't remember a player that is just like, we're going to face guard this guy for 60 minutes.
People tried to do it to Mikey Powell. But they couldn't do it because he was too fast. Like, it didn't work. They just gave up. They were like, oh, we'll just slide quick. But yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, for me, I was just absolutely frustrated watching Cornell in the second half. Like, even when they tied the game and went up by one, I could sense that Syracuse would take advantage of that as soon as they had an opportunity. And then they just didn't. You know, sometimes it just doesn't bounce for you. I mean, you could tell in every possession that the Orange offense had a plan, which I think that we were very critical of them earlier in the season for not having. But at some point, that plan broke down, and then the players, like, freelance, and that has also worked out for them. And this time it didn't. You know, there was no more luck left in the horseshoe. The Dome Gods left the building, and Cuse went down. And Cornell won almost... I think it was probably unexpected for them, too, because when they didn't score with about a minute left and Syracuse got the ball back, I think everybody thought, this is going OT. Cuse has what's way too much time for them. They're going to score, and they didn't, and the game's over.
I feel like when you see Syracuse clearing the ball with, like, 90 seconds left on the clock, you're like, oh, they're going to win by one goal, whether it's in regulation or it's in overtime, because that's just how – close games in the Dome seem to pan out. I guess between graduation early in the day and this game, the Dome Gods were a little tired. They just didn't have enough magic left in this one. I think, though, in that moment, I think particularly in those final 30 seconds when they had maybe three or four attempts at goal, I think that's when you want that guy who is your Syracuse alpha. You need someone that is clearly going to be the person to get the ball and make a play. But got to give credit, man. Christian Knight recovered from an early bombardment and made two stops in particular late in the game with about 5 minutes left. And then the Cornell D just played pretty well. And what has got to be the most strenuous spot, up by one against Syracuse with like 90 seconds left in their building. That's got to be like the most stressful situation. It's like playing Guitar Hero on Expert upside down. And, you know, another thing too is that the Cornell offense canned so many second chance opportunities. Like the one I'm thinking of is the double team where the goalie threw his player like a buddy pass. They double teamed, got the ball out right away. They went on to ensue the scoring on the ensuing possession. And then also the Clark Pettersson one where he just emerges from a scrum and just goes around the goalie for a score.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think, do you think that the Dome is the best home field advantage of any team in college lacrosse?
I don't know. Maybe.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. It has to be.
Only maybe from a mental perspective.
Right. That's what I mean. Just mental advantage. I think it's absolutely Syracuse has the best advantage in college lacrosse.
To speak to that point, I almost tweeted out a GIF of "Oops, I crap my pants" because that's how much I was like, I couldn't be playing in this game. I would be pooping my pants here.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about shutting off Teat. It definitely took him out of the game, But the other thing I wanted to talk about is that it took away Syracuse's best defender as well. And somehow people still underestimated Cornell's offense, who did, in fact, deliver a win, even if it was ugly. Obviously, Syracuse's goals were way prettier, flashier, and damn it, I'll say it, sexy. But sexy goals don't win you games. Athleticism doesn't win you games. Team offense, team defense, and team belief wins you games, even if you're visiting the unfriendly confines of the Dome. And hats off to Cornell for doing it. I picked them. I thought they could do it. It was real tight. It was real tight there at the end. I think it's tighter than the next game we're going to talk about, personally, even though it went to OT. But, yeah, I'm just blown away by Cornell's progression.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that not only did, with the shutoff, Cuse hold Jeff T to an assist, but they also won the faceoff and the ground ball battles by significant margins. They got more saves, too, and they still lost. Like, that's crazy. And I think Clark Peterson and a handful of other guys, you know, proved in this game that the offense is more than just a one-man show. Like if Cornell's offense is a band, then Jeff Teat is Robert Plant because he's so cult of personality-like. But when you look at the other guys, they're also really freaking good. You know, I fully expect Maryland to shut off Jeff Teat, but like I said at the beginning of this podcast, I think with Maryland's balance, you've got to find a way to get them in the game because they're going to play good defense, and they're also going to score too. Like, they're going to make him get him in the game.
I'm going to tell you one thing Maryland needs to do to be effective against Cornell defensively. They have to stop the pass across the face of the cage to the guy on the weak side, because that is how Cornell scores most of their goals. You didn't see it that often in this game, but throughout the entirety of the season, that is their secret weapon, is banging the ball so quickly and making the defense rotate and then just doing a quick flip across the cage. And there's always a guy there. Always. He's either creeping from X or he's sliding into that slot from the wing and you don't see him because he's switching with the topside guy. But that is the one thing they need to shut down. And if they can shut that down, they're going to have success. But if they can't, I mean, Cornell's going to dance. I mean, they're really impressive. And I don't think that Maryland has a defender that can do what Mellon did to Teat, because Mellon was already in Teat's head from when they played earlier in the season. And I don't think anyone from Maryland has that capability to get into his head in, you know, the space of one game. I think it's kind of an accumulation of effort.
All right, Kyle, before we continue with games, quick little sideway to Wharton Watch. And in the latest episode of Everything's Coming Up, Kyle, he picked all five finalists correctly.
Yeah. Listen, man, I hate to say I told you so. Just kidding. I love to say I told you so. I told you so. I knew they wouldn't pick a sophomore, and I knew Fields' injury would not get him picked. Do I take delight in those two not being picked? Absolutely not. I would much rather be wrong and have those guys in than be right and have it be the truth. But here we are. I mean, I had a bunch of people that we work with say, you know, you're a little hard on the selection committee there for the Tourton. You're a little hard on the NCAA committee. No, I don't think so. I think you got to speak truth to power. And I don't this is clearly like this award is now whoever makes it the farthest in the playoffs. That's all it is now. Like, if that's what the award is called, like, make up a different award. To me, that's not what the Tourton is. It's the best player in college lacrosse, not the best player in the playoffs. Make up a different award. That's garbage. I'm not happy about it. And I don't know many people that
are. You were right, and I was right too, because I told y'all there was going to be a lot of outrage, and there was. And to be fair, I think the committee had a no-win situation with the five finalists. Like, thinking about the decision the day of, I was like, I think my Tewuratan take is that Teat and Fields should be included, but I don't think any of the five guys who made it should be excluded. You know what I'm saying? Like, every guy in those five finalists deserves to be there, but the other two guys also deserve to be in there. And I think in this case, they should have done seven finalists. And the thing is like, I don't know if there's a rule, like there's a piece of writing that says you have to have five guys. But the counter argument to that is that no one knew you could have co-winners until it happened. So why not just be like, right, you know what? We're going to have seven finalists this year.
I think the only rule for Tewuratan is you got to wear pants at the ceremony. Like, come on. They do whatever they want.
I mean, they can do whatever they want. Wore shorts.
There's no. Yeah. Well, see, there's no rules. See?
Another issue I have with the decision was that the criteria, the whatever criteria, seemed to be inconsistent because they included Justin Gutterding because he was at the time the leading point scorer in the country, but they excluded Jeff Teat because he's a sophomore. But then they included Connor Kelly, who doesn't have the best production, but excluded Connor Fields. I'm saying that if they went with the same criteria, then they would have included Connor Fields in place of Patrick Spencer because they said this is a senior award this year. Kind of get what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. I just don't
think I articulated it well.
I don't see how they would do that. No, I just don't think they would do that. The reason I made the statements I made was because it made the most sense given their behavior in the past. It's not like I, you know, have a magic crystal ball that can tell me the future. It's just, this is what they've done. This is what they're going to do. And then they did it. It's not that surprising. The one thing I think that I didn't see coming as a result of these coming out was the whole thing about everyone was expecting that TD Ireland would be a finalist. And here's where we get into the other part of the selection criteria that, like, I think also probably came into this is quality of schedule, like quality of opponents.
Yeah.
Like, Ireland's numbers are insane. But anyone that, if he got nominated over Baptiste, someone would be like, yeah, look who he plays. He's in the America East, dude. Like, let's be real here. You know, Big East is a much better conference. Just facts out there. It's just a much better conference with a much better record in the playoffs. I think that was kind of surprising, but also, like, you know, there wasn't a lot of Jeff Teat uproar, like more so than I thought there would be. And I think, you know, we already talked about the Cornell Syracuse game. I think if you watch that, people felt pretty vindicated that he wasn't picked, if I'm honest. I'm pretty sure a couple people were like, see, that's why he didn't get picked.
Yeah.
But that's after the fact, so it's not really part of what we're talking about.
Yeah, the thing for me with TD Ireland was they were never going to include more than one faceoff guy, and they could not include Trevor Baptiste in his senior season, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, forget about history. Forget about people breaking records. Yeah, no, you guys definitely know what you're doing. Good job.
To speak to what you said slightly earlier, I don't think that this is like a locked up award for Trevor Baptiste, which I don't know. I kind of get that vibe from a few people. I think this is going to go to whoever goes farthest in the playoffs. I really do. I think this is one of the tightest races that I can imagine in a long time. It's going to go to the guy that goes the farthest. Yeah. All right.
It's a playoff award.
Let's move on.
It's a playoff award.
Denver 9, Notre Dame 7. The Pioneers take a big old dookie over everybody's expectations, come away with a victory in South Bend.
So I think that the Notre Dame offense that went off in the ACC tournament kind of fooled everyone into thinking that everything was fixed. And now we know that wasn't the case. I want to say first out, and I've actually been praising defenses a lot recently, so this is weird because I'm going to do it again. Denver's D-mids played so well that it took Garnsey going into wild chain dodges to create any sort of offense for Notre Dame. The mids were not having it, especially after Gleason left the game with an injury and Kosovo couldn't get free of his man for a shot. It looked like Denver was daring Pierre Byrne to shoot when he was up top, and they were holding fast in the low block when anyone inverted, and they did such a good job of it that it was like an entirely different team than the other Denver performances that I have seen this season. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm going to be real. I didn't see the first half of this game. I was at the Maryland Robert Morris press conference. When I came back, I saw that Gleason was out, and I saw the score line. So it was like 42 Denver. I was like, oh, I was right. The quote-unquote, we've been disrespected Denver showed up in this game. They were out there playing. They heard the slander all week. They came to play.
I mean, they didn't hear from me. But I think that if you're a fan of the Irish, you were pretty much upset with everything all game long. Nothing really went their way. And the most emblematic example of this is when they waved off Garnsey's incredible no-angle crease dive goal. That would have been a backbreaker because that would have brought them all the way up and a man up. Denver played the possession game to the best of their ability, and they worked for their shots. And the one thing that I want to touch on as a result of saying that, the Pios have mastered the art of the possession shot that looks like a real shot. And the way they've done it is other teams, Maryland, shoot over the cage. But Denver shoots wide, but they shoot close to the pipe. And they shoot wide, but they only shoot wide when their own man is behind the cage. So it's almost like a shot pass because they know they're going to get the ball back. It looks so much better than the over-the-top kind of like weird that went 10 feet over the net. What was he doing? But it's still a possession shot. But hey, listen, if it fools the refs, it fools the refs. It doesn't have to work on anyone else. My question for you is this. Does this style of control work against their next opponent, Albany?
I'm going to say it depends. And the reason why is going to come a little bit later. But you would think that these two teams, Albany and Denver, would put up fireworks. You think about the narrative that they've had past couple seasons. Oh, it's offense. It's the, you know, they win possessions. They play, you know, for Denver, they're super efficient. For Albany, they're free flowing. But I think in this game, if Albany gets out to leads like they've proven to this season, Denver won't be shooting possession shots. They will be shooting real shots. I don't imagine this game actually being high scoring, but and here's where that depends comes in. If Trevor Baptiste dominates, I would imagine we'll see Denver try to drain clock and keep the ball as far away from the Albany offense as possible.
I think no matter who wins the faceoff battle, Denver's going to play like that because there's no way they're running with Albany. They're not that they can't. They won't want to. That's just not what they're going to do. They're going to play like they played here. And it's funny because like we talk about the faceoff guys and, you know, having it be the most anticipated faceoff battle maybe ever. Let's just say ever. But it's really going to come down to who cans the shots and who can control the tempo outside of faceoffs, because that's not going to win you the game. It's really not. And when you have two guys this good, the chances of one of them absolutely dominating the other, I think it's got to be so low. I just think it's low. I think they're just going to cancel each other out. And then you're going to see, you know, the hustle plays, you know, who can back up the ball, who takes better shots, who works for their shots, who can avoid the stall clock going on them. That's the team that's going to win. And that's the stuff that's not really quantifiable to us talking about the game before it happens. But I think that's going to be the difference. It's not going to be the draws, although that's going to be fun to watch. I don't think it's going to decide the game because they're both too good.
Yeah, and something you didn't mention there that I want to point out is that I think that this game actually could come down to whose defense plays better, because actually I didn't even really know this until before this weekend, but Denver has the number one scoring defense I think a lot of people look at that and say, well, how much does the sheer possession advantage that Trevor Baptiste provides them play into that? But on the other end, I look at Albany and I see a team whose defense might actually be pretty underrated. I think that, you know, Stone Sims and Eric DeLuey are guys who can cover their guys. And I think that, you know, JD Colarusso is, I think he is a low key great goalie. Like, I don't think I voted for him.
First team all IL media team.
Yeah,
right?
I believe so. I voted him for second team, but I think he's up there and he's played a really tough schedule in his career past two seasons when he's been a starter. I think that whoever can come up with those possessions on the defensive end, possibly turn them into offense, that could be the difference in this game.
That's fair.
Kyle, weird watch, man.
I just...
Yeah.
Okay.
Hitting the wall?
Have you ever watched a movie that's like, it tricks you? Like, it presents itself on as one way, and then it just turns the table on you? You find out, like, it's a foreign film disguised as, like, a regular movie, and there's subtitles all of a sudden? This happened. I usually avoid these movies. I'm pretty good at sniffing them out. I messed up. I got into one of these. It was one of those revenge movies. I love revenge movies because I love revenge. Figured it'd be a slam dunk, you know, one of those things where, like, you know, someone is wronged and they have to come back. In this case, a mistress gets kicked off the cliff by her paramour, and she comes back and, you know, gets revenge. So literally the movie's called Revenge. So that happens, but this is one of those like art house movies that disguised itself as a fun B movie. Like, it had torture elements, like just mean violence, but also like funny, awkward violence and beautiful vistas of some countryside that I think is Mexico all at the same time. And I think I need to take a break from watching movies and shows that I don't know for a long time. Like, this one was too much. It's not you, Netflix. It's me. I need some time apart, you know, see other streaming services. Maybe I'll watch some YouTube, go back, play some FIFA, go for a walk, fight an Akumite, like something. I can't do this no more. I can't do it anymore, man.
Yeah, it blows my mind that it was revenge that broke you and not live action Full Metal Alchemist. Amazing.
I know.
Amazing.
I know.
All right, Kyle. So I've got a weird listen for this week. So Friday, two of my favorite bands of all time, the Arctic Monkeys and Beach House. Probably, you know, some people might know those bands, some people might not, but they came out with new albums. And man, the new Arctic Monkeys album is so friggin' different and strange than anything they've ever done before. So it's apparently a concept album about, like, a resort on a colonized version of the moon in, like, an altered futuristic state, I guess. Like, it's basically, like, the future, but they kept all the technology from the 60s, I think. But the whole album basically sounds like a Bond movie soundtrack, and I like it, but people already hate it, and I will say it isn't what I was expecting, and probably not something I wanted, but I still like it. It was like wanting tacos, but then your friend takes you out for like a nice steak dinner. Like, the steak dinner was good, but I still wanted the tacos, you know what I'm saying? I will say this, though. Beach House album slaps. That is awesome.
Arctic Monkeys made one good album. Just get over it.
Not true.
And it's like the first. It's the first album. Come on.
That's...
You didn't see that coming, did you? You didn't think I knew who the Arctic Monkeys were.
No, I've heard that take before, and I've got to say, one Kyle, good album. That is your worst take of all time.
It's a pretty common take. I'm gonna have the people with me on that one. What's our next game?
Johns Hopkins 10, Georgetown 9, overtime. This one was a thriller.
All right, get your drinks ready, because Nick Morocco is the most underrated goalie of 2018. That's just a fact at this point. I feel like no one was talking about him or Georgetown all season long. I mean, we did a little bit. I'm going to give us a little credit there. But when Beccaro got hurt, there was no mention of Morocco being the key player in that squad. Everyone counted them out. You know, and then they beat Denver. And then they draw Hopkins. They're like, oh, well, they're dead. They're facing Hopkins. They're screwed. There's no way. I just think that I'm so happy that Morocco got a spotlight, like a national spotlight, even though they lost. His saves at the end of the third quarter were like chill inducing. And the Georgetown defense stout in front of him as well. Ryan Hersey is incredible. I'm actually excited to see him play in the MLL this summer. I mean, hats off to Georgetown first off, first and foremost here.
Yeah, Georgetown belonged. You know, watching Kevin Warren get his boys up kind of got me, you know, in the feels, like wanting to be back with my old high school team. He got his boys up, and it was kind of tough to see them lose this game. I feel like, you know, along with Robert Morris, you know, Georgetown was like the people's champion of the first round. They were the darling that kind of – they played their butt off and – had everybody who wanted to see an underdog win on their side. I just think in this game, they just kept finding themselves on the defensive end late in the contest. And Hopkins' offense was patient, but also playing with a sense of urgency. Like they knew that they had to score, but they knew that they had to take the time to break down that defense because it was outstanding. Hersey, like you said, is a freak. And man, Kyle Maher, he just shot lights out per usual and willed the team back in this game with his shooting.
Yeah, I just want to say, I know I come off as a Hopkins hater, a hater of Terrapins, a hater of all things Maryland, really. And that's all true in like a pantomime villain kind of way. It's more fun for me to make fun of those things. But what I couldn't really shake as this game got tighter and the tide was turning was actually how great it would be for Hopkins to lose. Not in like a prideful way like I want them to, but in a way that opens up a conversation to top teams losing in the playoffs, because we didn't get that. You know, a sort of anything is possible narrative seemed to be written for Georgetown. It seemed so certain until it wasn't. And that moment was when Kyle Maher snapped off his fourth goal. At that point, Hopkins found their answer. They found their man of the moment. And it was weird because throughout the whole weekend, I watched all these games, some of them more closely than others. But I really fell into that trap of ifs, and I don't really do that often. And looking back at all the things that could have gone right for the teams that lost, there was a lot of things that could have changed these results. Like one play here, one play there. And I think that actually speaks to the quality of the tournament, the quality of these teams, the quality of the players. That it's not just, even though the teams for the top players with top players won, it's not just those teams that have great guys, you know, great talent on the roster. So I just, that was the thing that kind of stuck out to me here. And, you know, obviously, you know, congratulations to Hopkins for winning. It's just one of those thoughts that just like sits in your brain and curls around it. And it's still there. I'm still thinking about it, but this game was emblematic of that, you know? And I think that I haven't really talked about this too extensively, but this is the podcast and I get to talk. So the narrative of teams winning that aren't supposed to win is what makes sports great. And I feel like we were so close to that and it didn't happen. And I just wanted to like pause and point it out before we moved on.
Okay. Yeah. Lots of ifs throughout the first round of the tournament. Kyle though, man, I gotta say Georgetown looked pretty fresh with those Matt Cascade S helmets. But overall, it was not a great weekend for the custom helmets. I think a lot of them fell victim to the weekend, which means that those helmets will probably hit sideline swap sooner rather than later, right?
I would hope so, and I have already put in my request with Cascade for a matte navy helmet, even though I don't even
know. Those are so slick.
I don't even know if they make it yet, but I want it. I might be able to get one at sidelineswap.com. Sidelineswap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear, shop heads, helmets, shafts, and gloves for up to 70% off, or snag hard-to-find college and pro gear. All purchases are backed by SidelineSwap's buyer guarantee. Head to SidelineSwap.com. That's SidelineSwap.com. And download the iPhone app today.
So, Kyle, to finish up the three games, we're going to do them in kind of a scoreboard kind of manner. So this is the scoreboard section of the podcast. First game of the weekend, Yale 15, UMass 13. Now, one thing I will say about this is that a lot of people were saying that this scoreline was generous, but I do feel like UMass had a better shot to win the game late than the comparable game, which is Loyola Virginia. I feel like UMass actually had a shot of tying this game late, as opposed to Virginia, which was kind of just like doing a lot when there was not enough time left.
Right. I mean, listen, if you liked physical lacrosse, then you loved this game, because it was a straight up slobber knocker, just like I said it would be right here on the podcast last week. UMass, and I think you're right, UMass wasn't really ever out of it until Yale had that long possession in the fourth to ice it. You know, it was a better game than people thought it would be, but better wasn't good. And I'm sure Yale will take a lot of things that they didn't like and change them up for the next round. And I think one of the things is that they're going to have to protect that goalie better. It's just they're going to have to get a clear and a ride that can help them out a little bit more. I think that needs to do more work than having to rely on stopping howitzer shots that are going to come through.
Yeah, shout out to the Minuteman. They played I thought they played a really appealing brand of lacrosse during the good parts of their game. You know what I'm saying? Like, they played fast. They, like you said, they were early offense connoisseurs. And it was attractive. It was fun lacrosse to watch. So shout out to them. I definitely enjoyed watching them play against Yale in this game. To take things in a souther direction, though, Duke 17, Villanova 11. Yeah.
So I usually like talking about games that I write the stories for, regardless of what happens in them. This is the exception. One of the nice things about the games being much better on Sunday is that people forgot how much hate this result got before it was even played. The pitchforks were out for the selection committee after Villanova's subpar performance. And this is yet another example where garbage goals made the final look closer than it really was. This was over very early into the third quarter.
Yeah, I mean, I think Duke scored, what, 8 goals? 8-1 run for them in the second quarter. And I was just like, phew, is it 5 o'clock yet? This was one of those games where I was like, man, Bucknell, Rutgers, Ohio State had to be up for giving a better game than what Villanova is putting on the field right now. But Rutgers, man, they should have beaten Ohio State. So I rest my case. I actually thought that this was a good game. Albany 18, Richmond 9.
So you say it's a game, but what do you say about a game where the most controversial thing was, why is Connor Fields still on the field with 5 minutes left? Albany had this game in the bucket, carrying it down the beach, built a sandcastle out of goals, and then kicked it down before they walked back to the car. This was a send-off for seniors, disguised as a playoff game. And that's not a nice thing to say, but that's what I saw.
That's fair.
I'm sorry.
I don't know. I just like watching Albany play, so I think that's why I enjoyed it. But I got to say, I think the Dane train looked good in this game. And I think a lot of people thought, you know, with the questionability of Connor Fields, how effective can he be? And if he can't play, how effective can guys like Tahoka be with an altered role? But he came back, and it looked early on like he was going to operate mostly as a finisher. But, you know, he was cutting off ball. You know, he was getting leverage with his knee. he was dodging. He became the second all-time leading scorer behind only Lyle Thompson in this game. So I thought he looked pretty good. But I do agree, he should have come off the field sooner. Like, I think they had like a 14-8 lead with like 10 minutes to go. I was like, all right, you got to get him off the field. Like, we can't have another Dylan Molloy situation here. But they didn't bring him off until, like you said, like with 5 minutes to go.
Yeah, I didn't think that was such a big deal so much as I thought that it was. He wasn't dodging at that point. He was just kind of there to catch a pass and sling another pass so someone else could score. So I'm okay with it. He was just stacking up the points. He's just stacking up his money. That's fine with me. I didn't think he was in any danger. They didn't need him to carry the ball. They had plenty of other people to do it. But it's funny. You said the Danes looked really good, but you did not pick them to win the national tournament. So I guess it's just me left on the Dane train. You're running with Greyhounds now.
Oh, man, Kyle. Making me feel bad.
Oh.
Bro, I invented the term Dane train. Of course, I'm still on the train.
We were here. We were on the wall, and then you jumped off. You're out training dogs now. I'm with the Danes. You went with the thoroughbreds. You were like, nah, y'all are mangy.
Kyle,
I'm out.
That is wrong. Kyle. I'm going to tell you the status of the Dane train right here, right now.
What is it?
The conductor of the Dane train, whoever might that be, sees something in the distance. It's championship weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And they realize that they can't stop. Mm. They're either going to hit championship weekend or they're going to derail before then. You know where I am in all of this? I am duct taped to the front of the train. So I'm either getting splattered at championship weekend or I'm going down, getting derailed with the Dane train. That's where I'm at.
All right. You got a Spencer's Gifts t-shirt on, the glitter on it. You're just heading towards the cliff. Hey, man, I'm on the train too. We're both going to bite it.
Yeah.
It's all good.
All right, Kyle, let's wrap this up with the Adam Sherlambidez play of the week. You were inspired by this goal.
Yeah, I don't even know where to start. There's a play in the UVA game where Spencer got hit catching the ball. The hit spun him, and he switched hands into the spin that it sent him into and ripped the ball top shelf. It's like one of the most impressive goals that I have ever seen. The body control, the thought process, and the difficulty rating for that move is off the charts. Like, most players wouldn't even think to do that. And you could tell that he was like, I'm here. Okay, how do I make this better? No one's open. I'm going to shoot it. And I'm just going to transfer the energy from the hit into the ball. And he did it like a damn superhero. It was unreal. It's an unreal play. If there's anyone that clipped it, go watch it 100 times over and try to figure out if you could do it. Because you can't. It's wild.
It was insane. He gets hit, and it's at that point, it was like, you know what? Screw you, bro. I'm going to just shoot the ball as hard as I can, turning to the cage. And he shoots it straight over the goalkeeper's
head. It's a
great play. Cold-blooded.
It's a great play.
All right, Kyle. That is our show. Kyle, we got 2 weeks left.
Yeah. Then it's MLL time for me and recruiting time for you. I win.
Yeah.
Mine's more fun.
Yeah, sure. If you appreciate the podcast, give us feedback. You can find me at Dan_Aburn. You can tell your friends about this podcast. You can leave a rating. And of course, you can subscribe. Kyle, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at TheKyleDevitt. Hit me up. Had a lot of fun on Twitter this weekend. So looking forward to keeping that interaction up. And again, please, if you can go check us out on iTunes, leave a rating. That'd be great. 5 stars is better than 4. And Thanks for listening. See you guys later.
Thanks, guys. Yeah.